Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
What a week, right? There's so much going on. That's what's happening in the Trump era. We're just 2 weeks in. This hour, we're going to be joined by Marshall Faulk because we're talking Super Bowl. We're talking about the running game again. We haven't done that in a long time, and he's one of the great runners of all time, the greatest show on turf. Marshall Faulk will be with us, too. He also played years with the Colts. And Ambassador Michael Oren will bring side what's happening in Israel as we try to find out if there'll be a phase two to the ceasefire with Hamas, who sadly is still in existence. So before we get to the ambassador, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The Super Bowl preparation didn't start for these teams after the AFC and NFC championship games. They started in the summertime. They had a belief that they would be here in this moment, and that's ultimately what they're preparing for. You don't wait for big moments for them to become big moments. You live those moments every day like they are big moments, so you're prepared when the moment arises.
Super Bowl Sunday is this weekend. Who are you rooting for? The Chiefs, the Eagles, and guess what tradition is happening again this year? The presidential interview is back after Joe Biden put it on the shelf. Brett Baer will be doing that. We'll talk about it.
Number two.
This isn't a game. When the operations get leaked like that, it puts our officers at great risk. It's already a dangerous job. But when they get a heads up we're coming, it's only a matter of time before our officers are ambushed.
Yeah, no kidding. Unstoppable. Tom Homan has been a force at the border, but he's fighting lefty mayors. And now even incompetence in his midst as some let go of illegals after they've been captured. And he ships some of them out to Gitmo. While in the media, could they be giving away ICE raids before they happen to protect illegals?
Number one.
Fire Elon Musk. Elon Musk took control of our country's financial nuclear codes.
Elon Musk is destroying our federal government. He feels he bought himself a president.
Musk and his merry band of minions.
Nobody voted for his hackers.
Yes, hackers or people evaluating what we're spending. Democrats flail. Keep fighting Elon Musk and the ban on elite efficiency experts. They are his band of experts are cutting fat from our budget, raising ire amongst Dems, as you just heard. And USAID is being targeted, and they should be. Others are told if you're going to stay at home, you're going to be fired. What is wrong with that? Get back to work. The best hope that I've had in my lifetime of balancing our budget is happening right now with Doge and Musk. My fear is he's going to say, I don't need this. And he doesn't, by the way. And he'll just leave. We need him. Ambassador Michael Oren joins us right now. Ambassador, the other big theme this week has been the arrival of Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's the first to visit president in his second term. What do the people of Israel think about that?
Very impressed. I think a country of 10 million people, one country out of 194 in the world. And the head of our country, the democratically elected leader of our country, gets to be the first foreign leader to visit the White House. That's very significant.
What's been gained? I know they had a long I think it's fantastic. You know that. And I also know they've had long meetings. To the fact is the speaker had to Speaker Johnson had to postpone their meeting yesterday because his meeting at the White House went long. What's going on, the best you could tell us without giving away intelligence, between these two powers?
There's so many things on the table. Okay, obviously the Gaza issue and President Trump's idea for relocating Palestinians from the Gaza Strip in order to affect the restructuring of the construction of the Strip. That is itself a massive issue, very controversial, as you've seen. I think it's extremely interesting. It's the first fresh idea I've heard in many, many years. But beyond that, it's the Saudi-Israel peace deal, which has been on the table, and how that can be moved forward. It is Lebanon and what to do about Hezbollah, the continued Hezbollah threat there. It is Syria, Syria, which is falling apart or not falling apart. What will be the nature of America's relationship with Syria, Israel's relationship with Syria? And above it all, Brian, the most crucial point of all is Iran, the Iranian regime, which is, according to press reports last week, is inching toward a nuclear weapon, making a nuclear bomb. That cannot happen. That will be a game changer, not just for Israel and the Middle East, but for the world. And coordinating U.S. policy, how to meet and neutralize that Iranian threat.
True. And there's a window because of the great work you guys did taking out their air defense. Because of the elimination of Hezbollah, almost, or decapitated, because Assad is no longer in power. That's a friendly regime to Iran. And then Hamas, as their diminishing power. This is as vulnerable as Iran has been, let alone their own unrest, because their people hate their government. Is it impossible not to consider taking advantage of that window?
It is impossible, and it would be a huge mistake. And the question is how? Israel has major capabilities. Yes, we were able to decapitate Hezbollah, as you said. We took out their leader, Hassan Nasrallah, who's hiding beneath 60 feet of concrete. But Israel doesn't have strategic bombers. It's got small bombers. Those bombers were able to reach Iran easily and to take out the air defenses. But taking out the nuclear facilities is a whole different caliber of challenge. These are facilities that are literally under mountains. Now, the United States doesn't have strategic bombers, doesn't have B-52s, B-1s, B-2s. Which can carry a 30,000-pound bomb, actually can carry three of them, a bomb from 50,000 feet in the air. There's nothing Iran has that can touch them. The question is whether the United States would be willing to do that. Right now, President Trump appears committed to reimposing punishing sanctions on Iran. During the Biden administration, Iran's oil exports went up to $54 billion a year. Trump has pledged to bring them down to zero. And then we see whether this regime can survive.
Right. They said that they'd be open to coming to the table. My fear is this drags on forever. They're able to get a new S-400 system in there from the Russians, and they're able to stand up and suppress their population again. I know you don't want to instigate a conflict, but my goodness, this has been an enemy of America since the 70s.
We're not instigating a conflict. The conflict exists. And it was a totally unprovoked conflict. It's Iran.
Remember, they promised to hit you guys back, remember?
Attacking Israel, attacking American allies throughout the Middle East and beyond. Iran is the world's largest state sponsor of terror. Tried to assassinate President Trump, tried to assassinate John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, and frankly, tried to assassinate me when I was ambassador in Washington.
So I want you to hear what the prime minister said about what he now has in the administration. Cut 44.
He recognized Jerusalem as our capital and moved the American embassy there, recognized our sovereignty over the Golan Heights, got out of the disastrous Iran deal, brokered, and we worked together on this, the historic Abraham Accords that brought peace to Israel and four Arab states. You want more? I mean, that's a lot. And look what he's done in the last few days. I mean, he's done remarkable things. He's released the ammunition that we need to... continue and march our march to victory. He's taken action against UNRWA and these other UN agencies that hate America and hate Israel. He's done enormous things. Yes, he's the greatest friend that Israel has ever had in the White House.
I mean, it's pretty hard to argue with that. And thing is, confirming that they were munitions held back by Joe Biden and his administration while saying something differently publicly. And UNRWA, I understand and read in Jerusalem Post that some of the hostages have said they were kept in UNRWA buildings against their will. Do you need any more proof that this UN organization was in bed with Hamas?
You don't. And I've been arguing for the dismantling of UNRWA for years now. And just the fact that UNRWA is hiding hostages in their buildings or half their staffs or Hamas members, that's the least of it. It's a tip of the iceberg. UNRWA as an organization teaches that hundreds of thousands of Palestinian children every year to hate the state of Israel, and that the only way that their dreams will be fulfilled will be if Israel disappears. And American taxpayers are paying for that. And that's got to stop.
How do you feel about President Trump's idea is having the U.S. take over and build up the Gaza Strip and told the Palestinians temporarily or permanently, you should probably leave. There's no running water. You can't live in the rubble. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think obviously it'd be hard to implement. It's not easy. But what I liked about the whole idea was that it's a new idea. I mean, for 30 years now, American policymakers have been stuck on this notion that somehow the Israel-Palestinian conflict is the core conflict in the Middle East, and the only way to solve it is by creating a Palestinian state. And along comes President Trump and comes out earlier this week and says, well, no, the major problem is Palestinians' commitment to destroying the state of Israel. And the reason they're committed to that because they grew up in a certain socioeconomic environment which promotes that. So we've got to change it at its base. So I think that the United States could help rebuild Gaza certainly is a wonderful opportunity. And when there were 21 Israeli settlements there, they were along the beach. People used to go there for the weekend. It was great. It's right. It's a great beachfront. But first, we have to deal with the question of Hamas and the hostages. And that is a thorny one, because the more pressure we put on Hamas militarily, they don't release hostages. They shoot the hostages. So what are we to do? They still have 60 hostages, and we have to figure out a way, on one hand, to get those hostages back, on the other hand, to destroy Hamas.
I know, but it just, and I know it kills you guys more than anything, but to let out prisoners, thousands of prisoners for hostages, just it's just almost counterproductive, as much as I feel for the people being held against their will. The Gaza comments around the world, no one likes it, it seems. Listen.
He's got his eye on some real estate deal because he thinks that the coastline of Gaza is going to be great for some new hotel.
It's preposterous, and it's illegal by any understanding of international law.
This is not anything of a plan. This is a complete American imperialism at its roots, at its core. I just don't think we can really begin to even comprehend what we're hearing 2 weeks in from this administration.
Clearly, America is now, you know, expressing clearly that they want to occupy permanently, probably, Gaza. They want the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
So, ridiculous partisan reaction, but they also don't love it in the Middle East, and neither do our allies. But it changes the tone in Qatar, don't you think? It gets them thinking to themselves, listen, you know you can't live there. Do you know Hamas can't run the place? That's never going to be allowed. You don't want a two-state solution. You want Israel out. That's never going to happen. So we should give up on the two-state solution. We should even stop saying it, Ambassador Oren.
Well, it's never going to happen. I've long been an opponent. But that's almost beside the point here. I want to quote Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who says, oh, all these people who are naysayers to what the president's proposal, let them have a better plan. And I'll tell you, there is none. Right now, they were talking about taking the Palestinian Authority from Ramallah and putting them into Gaza. The Palestinian Authority in 2007 was able to stand up to Hamas for about 3 days before they were all killed. All the Palestinian policemen were killed, and they've been trained by the U.S. Army. So you're going to put the Palestinian Authority there, Hamas will kill them. You put an international force there, Hamas will begin to knock them off too. And you understand that as long as Hamas has guns, there is no alternative. There's no day after plan. Simple as that. And what the president is saying is American troops are not going to be involved. Israel has to do that. So at the end of the day, we still have to do that. And if America wants to go in and rebuild Gaza, that's great. That's a great idea. Anybody's got a better one? I'd love to hear it.
So, Ambassador, how do you have a phase two if the phase two right now reads you guys get out of Gaza? You're not going to get out of Gaza, right?
Well, not entirely in phase two, but a lot of it. And it is the most painful decision that any Israeli government, I think, ever had to make. You get some of the hostages back. We have to assume that Hamas is not going to give us back all the hostages. They'll say, oh, we don't know where this one is, and we don't know where that one is. And then we'll find out years later they've been living in some cave. This is what they do. They engage in emotional and psychological terror, not just physical terror. But we have a covenant in our country that when we send our kids off to fight, if they fall captive, the state will do everything in its power to get them back, even pay a prohibitive price, which is letting these terrorists out of jail. And we know that 70-80% of them go back to being terrorists. Mm-hmm. They don't sit down and have a quiet life. And so it's a price we have to pay in order to uphold that covenant, because that covenant is essential to our resilience. And we understand this. It's not just a moral issue. It's a strategic issue. Painful, painful, painful. And at times you got to wake up in the morning and say a little prayer of thanks that you are not the prime minister of Israel making that decision.
Ambassador, I know it's impossible to know for sure, but in Syria, this government, they have al-Qaeda roots, and it's going to be Sunni, not Shia. Got it. But they're considering letting the Russians' bases stay. I don't know why the U.S. is just allowing this to happen. What should Israel's role be with this government? What should the U.S. role be with this government? What would you do?
Oh, I think Israel has an interest in having Syria being a very different country. Syria as a country has never done anything but threaten its neighbors, and not just Israel. So if Syria would be a lot smaller, break up into various pieces, I think that would not be the worst outcome from Israel's perspective. But I think the United States, and I don't want to dictate policy to the U.S., but if Russia's cutting a deal with this new Syrian government to maintain its bases along the Eastern Mediterranean, and those bases are there, not to help anybody in the Middle East, certainly not any American ally in the Middle East, then the United States government should make it very clear. It's either the Russians or us. You don't get to ride on two horses here. You don't get to dance at two weddings. And very clear, they won't get a cent.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. I know this. The Iranians are not using it. They're enemies of Iran, and that helps, right? That helps because they got to resupply Hezbollah, usually overland through Syria. So does that help your cause in making it harder for Hezbollah to get rearmed?
And that, too. Not only are they going to use those bases to rearm Hezbollah, but keep in mind, Iran is an ally of Russia. Iranian missiles and drones are killing Ukrainians, America's ally in Europe. Why would the United States sit quietly and let Russia maintain its military presence in Syria?
I hear you. Fascinating time, Ambassador. We'll look forward to it. I know phase two talks, I guess, are going to begin, and we'll see where this goes. Ambassador, and there's going to be more hostages this weekend?
Yes, there is, God willing.
How many?
God willing, yes.
Okay. Do you know how many?
It's supposed to be 3-4, but let's see. Maybe more. We'll see. It's all negotiations at this point.
All right. Ambassador, you definitely have a friend in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and I think the whole Arab world knows this. Michael Oren, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Me too. 1-866-408-7669. We've got to talk about the Super Bowl. Got to talk about the outrage that Musk's presence is having. The most successful businessman in the world suddenly is not competent enough to streamline the government spending. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Underwear drawers are like the Wild West. You never know what you're going to pull out or what shape it's in. So upgrade your collection with the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. MeUndies' signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug from your favorite sweater. Plus, it's breathable and oh so comfy, making it ideal for all-day wear. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Spotify with code Spotify. That's MeUndies.com/Spotify, code Spotify.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Elon Musk has absolutely no business handling the personal information of American taxpayers.
This information has never before been shared with outsiders. Safeguards on its abusive use by Musk and his merry band of minions.
Why in the hell were a bunch of kids who are not even legally old enough to rent a car given access to Americans' private information? President Trump might be fine surrendering complete control to de facto President Musk, but Congress shouldn't be okay with an unelected billionaire calling the shots.
We only have one president at a time, and nobody voted for Elon Musk. Nobody voted for his hackers.
They're not hackers. They're probably the most sophisticated, successful group of engineers in the country, part of a global phenomenon, which is Elon Musk, which is Tesla, SpaceX, Starlink, the tunnels, chips and brains. They're part of it. Human resources, manufacturing, that's what they're doing. They're using their expertise. And they're a group, an organization analyzing this the same way people worked on Obamacare. Only they're competent. They're people that aren't political. They're looking to get our fiscal house in order. They're experts. Fully supervised, look-only situation. And then they looked and thought, how do we save money? Our workforce is too big. Let's offer them buyouts, and they're doing it. USAID needs to be reined in. They refuse to cooperate. And a further examination, we know why. Some terrible programs that the American taxpayer wants nothing to do with. And I don't know why Democrats are digging in on this bad policy.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Corruption at USAID took a number of forms. One of them was that people were subverting the president's will, refusing to, I should say, some of the career bureaucrats were refusing to implement the president's agenda. And they had the opinion that they knew better than the American people who elected the president. And so they figured they would do what they thought was right and not what the president thought was right. And a lot of them were beholden or had ties to the previous administration, the Obama administration. You know, the large majority of them had voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Important. That's Mark Moyer, who's a whistleblower, talking about the reality of what he found at USAID. Why is that important? There's 10,000 people there. They're running their own foreign policy. They were not answering to the State Department. When Senator Joni Ernst asked for information forensically about what you're spending it on and questioned some of the programs, they told her, don't ask again. Don't ask again. So when they did the same thing this time and they said, we need access, DOGE, they said, we're not giving you access. They said, you're fired. And now they're going to knock it down to 300 people folded into the State Department, and the programs are going to be okay. Mark Moyer is probably one of the whistleblowers. I hope there are more. And he talked about how these programs are hidden. They're not going to talk about how corrupt and bizarre they are. They're going to give them different names along the way. So with some of the questionable decisions, how about this? Gender diverse support in Bangladesh, $1 million. How about $7.4 million for Syrian democratic political processes? In Syria, have you seen any democratic processes? $1.9 million for Guatemalan transgender support. Honduran LGBT group, 1.8. Are you happy with that? This is what Democrats are upset about. $55 million to strengthen Libyan financial management. Really? The Russians basically roll in Libya after the terrible ouster of Gaddafi, which was followed up by absolutely nothing with Barack Obama. And we're giving $55 million to that? $49 million improving relations in Zambia public schools. $4.5 million fight disinformation in Kazakhstan. What? $14.9 million supporting LGBT youth in Cambodia. Listen, evaluating USAID activities in Haiti cost us $20 million. Evaluating. Do you realize how outrageous this is that Democrats are upset these are being called back now? What they should come back and say, if you don't like those programs, Mr. President, don't let it hurt the other programs, and then tell me the good ones. Because a lot of these programs are bad, but they have more palatable names, depending on the administration. Here's Mark Moyer again, cut 10.
Some of them, you know, did as they were told, but there was a large resistance element. And in one case, I was at a meeting, and they talked about how there was this aid going into Syria, and we need to hide it from the White House because we don't want President Trump finding out about it and canceling it. They apparently just forgot I was in the room.
So he was upset. Whistle blew, and he got fired. So who else is upset about USAID? So as you know, Peggy Noonan is a conservative, been somewhat open to Trump, but been a pretty big critic. She came out and says, of all the agencies being batted about, the one we'll remember first when we recall this period in history is the U.S. Agency for International Development, as much of whose line item spending was devoted to cultural imperialism. You have seen the lists. I just went over those lists. USAID produced a DEI musical in Ireland, funded LGBT activism in Guatemala, and spent $426,000 to help Indonesian coffee companies become more climate and gender friendly. $447 to promote the expansion of atheism in Nepal. I know this is a joke, right? So when you look at what they're pushing on the world, you think they're not fighting anti-American feeling, she writes. They are causing anti-American feeling. Please tell me how this helps us. As recently as 2009, Wall Street Journal's Tom Nicholson writes, there was still an interest in improving transparency at USAID. President Obama said this, the American people's money must be spent to advance the priorities, not to line the pockets of contractors or to maintain projects that don't work, close quote. Why don't people bring up President Obama? And lastly, Warren Christopher, as Mark Thiessen indicated, tipped us off yesterday. Warren Christopher is Secretary of State for Bill Clinton, 1995. He proposed a plan to eliminate three independent foreign policy agendas USAID was doing. The Arms Control and Disarmament Act, the merger into a super State Department. In a 15-page letter, the Democratic Secretary of State in a single-space memo said his State Department declared the current organizational structures and activities of the department and other foreign affairs agencies are increasingly redundant, bloated, and unresponsive to policymakers. Back to Joni Ernst. She asked about the policies, asked about the programs, and they were told just to stop asking. Warren Christopher thought that in 95. Barack Obama thought that in 2008. But now it's upsetting that Elon Musk has identified it last weekend. Here's more from Warrior, Cut 11.
When Trump came in 2017, they turned climate change and LGBTQ programs into resilience. They put these names on them, or they would say, well, this is really about developing self-sufficiency, because that was something Trump talked about. And so it's going to require a lot of people digging into the details.
You see? So when you said, they collapsed the bad programs, well, what are you lying about? So you're going to call it resilience and you're really going to be doing climate change? Are you telling people in Ireland, I'm going to fund your musical? Why? Because the Irish need to like us more with their their anti-Israeli programs, calling what Israel's doing in fighting back genocide. So we got to go fund their musical. And I'm Irish. It's crazy. So that's what he's doing. My fear is I'm going to come into work and find out that Elon Musk says, I don't need this anymore. I don't need the ridicule. I'm doing this for free. And even though Trump's not going to do everything he's doing, what he's doing now is hard to argue with. Here's what he said about Elon yesterday at the prayer breakfast. Cut one.
Did you see what happened yesterday where they found hundreds of millions of dollars of money was fraudulently given to newspapers and, I guess, Politico? I don't know. They're here. Good. I hope you're enjoying your breakfast. No, they gave money to all this out of U.S. aid, right? USAID. It came out hundreds of just tremendous amounts of money, had nothing to do with anything. This is a terrible thing that was experienced, but we're catching them left and right. We're catching them to a point where they don't know what the heck is going on. They can't believe they're getting caught. And I have great respect for the people that are doing it. Elon Musk is helping us on it. And he's pretty good at it.
So, and then I'm watching Hillary Clinton yesterday, and Hillary Clinton is ridiculing the 20-something-year-olds that are in the Treasury trying to find out where there's wasteful spending. And he says, basically it's because they can't rent a car, was the quote. All I can tell you is, since when are you against 20-somethings? No offense, Hillary, but your generation, even my generation, not great for the most part. Social media and digital things, we didn't grow up with it. So why would you fault somebody who's probably been online since they were 10, who were good enough to get Elon Musk's attention in their 20s, and then was asked, just go work for the government for a few months to help find out where our spending is. So if I'm a 23-year-old coming out of college, or if I was work for SpaceX for 2 years, 3 years, and I'm doing well enough that Elon Musk says, can you help me out here? I need you. So, and then when she gets mad at Sean Duffy because he says, can Elon Musk help work with our to streamline our digital processes at transportation? Here we go with Hillary Clinton. This is what she tweets out. They have no relevant experience. Most of them aren't old enough to rent a car. And you're going to let them mess with airline safety that's already deteriorating on your watch? You idiot. He's been on the job for 2 days, and there was a plane one day, and there was a plane crash, and then there was another. You're blaming the transportation secretary for that? Sean Duffy answers, Madam Secretary, with all due respect, experienced Washington bureaucrats are the reason our nation's infrastructure is crumbling. You need to sit this one out. And she says, U.S. Airlines has gone 16 years without fatal crashes. The MAGA fired the FAA chief, gutted the Aviation Security Advisory Committee, and threatened air traffic controllers with layoffs. Now there have been 2 fatal crashes. Hope you unvetted 22-year-olds fix things fast. I mean, what are you supposed to say to that? She's sitting there with her BlackBerry, because that was cutting edge back then, using her emails. We know all the things she irresponsibly did, never really accomplished anything. Ran for election, got trounced because she was lazy and had no message and is thoroughly unlikable. And now she feels like she's got a way in. So I'll give you some of the other side. I'm sure USAID is some great work. I'm sure there's some fantastic people. If I met them face to face and they could show me what they're doing with malaria or with these nets and all these things, maybe there are. And I imagine if you have 10,000 people, some are really good. But to say that they're beyond examination and their money's going in the right direction. So I asked Samantha Power. So, of course, she was with USAID as administrator. She was on CNN. Cut five.
These are staff who are overseeing programs that are saving lives or were saving lives until a few weeks ago. These are people who are making sure that kids who are on the brink of starvation get access to food that is currently now stuck in ports in Kenya, in the United States itself, food that American farmers have grown, food that families are desperate to get their hands on. And even if a switch were flipped and someone were to reconsider and say, yes, let's go back to using American farmers' food to reach people, there would be nobody to administer these programs.
Well, we'll see. What you should have done is say, I'm embarrassed about the Guatemalan, Vietnam EV push. I'm embarrassed that I'm pushing for insurgents in Hungary. But I'm going to tell you, these programs are good and go to bat for them. Instead, you arrogantly say, how dare you? And the response amongst the Trump people are, watch me. So the Hungarian foreign minister weighed in yesterday, said the former administration couldn't digest that we weren't ready to give up our national positions. We were not ready to give up our representation or our national interests. And we were not ready to give up our non-liberal, patriotic, conservative type of approach. Because they said that USAID was a tool to interfere with their domestic issues. I'm telling you, this is a fight Democrats should understand. Or just ask John Fetterman what to do. They don't want. Because upon further review, there was a history of a problem, and you have a president that's addressing that problem. The other thing is, what Elon Musk did, recommended by the president, is said for your federal workers, 2.3 million, put them on an email and said, if you leave now, you get 6 to 8 months severance pay, but just hit and resign on the subject line and you can go. Now, the union representing them is suing. So a judge looked at this and says, we'll give you to Monday to make a decision. So what's going to happen? Is a judge going to overturn the will of the people to cut back on the federal government because we can't afford to pay our bills and we're running a $1.3 trillion deficit each year? Here's Jonathan Turley, cut 15.
That's what Musk is known for. He's known for someone who rejects path dependence. He did that at Twitter. You know, they said he couldn't fire all those people at Twitter. He did that, and Twitter became more efficient, and the operations continued unimpeded. And that was against all the predictions that Twitter would literally shut down because it needed every one of those or most of those employees. So Musk is coming in here. And yeah, the terror alert in Washington is quite astonishing.
So he goes on to say, OK, what legally is the Trump administration on good legal grounds? Cut 16.
This idea that this is a danger to democracy is rather odd. You have a president who just ran on a pledge to shrink the government, to look for waste. He brought in someone from the outside for a reason, because past pledges by presidents have gone nowhere in terms of changing the way Washington functions. So he brought in this guy who operates with a different approach. And look, the truth is they want people to leave some of these positions. The fact is that if you throw a badger into a crowded car, people are going to get out. And Musk is that badger. I mean, he threw him in that car, and they're trying to change the way government is composed and is running.
All right. Just use common sense. If you're a federal worker, unless you're one of the 3% that go to work, you're staying at home. Trump said, you can't stay at home. You got to get to work. Almost everyone listening to me who isn't working for themselves got to go to work. So you have these Jamie Dimon, the most sophisticated CEOs in the world, who said, I need my people at work. So even though they told us that, you know, someday we're not going to have to commute to major cities, we can work at home, they realized the social aspect, the improvement, the mentorship can happen when you're separate during the pandemic. Companies have suffered. So they're saying get to work. If you don't get to work, you're fired. Instead of saying you're fired, he said, I'm going to give you severance, but you're out. Go to the private sector and help do something positive for the economy. And if you're invaluable, you'd be asked to stay or your job will be filled. The next look is going to be Trump looking at the NGOs. The EPA reportedly is laying off 168 workers. We have to lean out in order to be able to pay our bills. The number one expenditure of our budget is interest on the debt. Why is that in our interest to continue that? When we come back, BrianKilmeade.com is where to go. Click on contacts. You can write me. And we're also going to take a look at what's happening overseas. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. President of the United States is going to meet with the Prime Minister of Japan next. That's his big thing.
Breaking news. The latest headlines. Exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you have any plan to change Afghanistan's situation? Are you able to recognize Taliban? Because I'm an Afghan journalist, Afghan suffrage woman. Any comment about Afghanistan? What's your future plan for Afghan people, especially Afghanistan?
I have a little hard time understanding you. Where are you from?
Afghanistan.
Actually, it's a beautiful voice and a beautiful accent. The only problem is I can't understand a word you're saying. But I just say this, good luck. Live in peace.
He's talking about Afghanistan. And by the way, he's asking for our money back for our equipment we left behind. He's also going to cut off aid almost immediately. And he wants our hostages out. And that's got to happen. We didn't even know there were hostages till a month before Joe Biden left office. And then with some uneven exchange was made. Well, the Taliban want to get money from us? Are you kidding? So that's got to be addressed. And also, no one's disputed the fact that evidently Afghanistan should know. I guess they don't have the pill over there. They got a whole bunch of condoms that we supplied to them or gave them the money to buy for themselves at the local CVS. Not really sure. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'm going to be live on stage, History, Liberty, and Last for Fox Nation. We're going to be February 15th. I'm going to be at the Florida Theater. And then on the 22nd of March, I'm going to be at the Factory right outside St. Louis. And VIP tickets left there. I think we're sold out on VIP in Florida. They're opening up the balcony, so get some seats.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you, closing out another frenetic week, but all good. Mike Allen, former special assistant to the President of the United States, senior director of national security and staff direction of the House Intel Committee, will be joining us. He used to do that job. Now he's analyzing from the outside. That'll be great. Griff Jenkins is standing by, too. We have a lot going on today. Meanwhile, remember that guy named Elon Musk? He's going to be a little bit busy because I think SpaceX is going to be in action. Also, SpaceX will launch a batch of Starlink V2 mini satellites for their second generation high-speed, low-Earth orbit internet satellite constellation. Yes, but he is the dumbest billionaire that AOC ever met. Keep that in mind always when I update you on all his progress. Secretary of Defense Hegseth will host an honor in a bilateral with the Australian Deputy Prime Minister and Defense Minister today. That'll be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the president will hold a press conference at some point with the Prime Minister of Japan. Imagine that, a press conference with the Prime Minister where we don't know the questions already. Before we get to Griff, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The Super Bowl preparation didn't start for these teams after the AFC and NFC championship games. They started in the summertime. They had a belief that they would be here in this moment, and that's ultimately what they're preparing for. You don't wait for big moments for them to become big moments. You live those moments every day like they are big moments, so you're prepared when the moment arises.
Sounds easy, Tom Brady. That was him with Fox and Friends with us 1 hour ago. Super Bowl Sunday this weekend. We're rooting for... who are you rooting for, Chiefs or Eagles? We'll talk about the game, what's at stake, the pregame, the 3 o'clock interview with Brett Baer, and anything else that's on your mind.
Number two.
This isn't a game. When the operations get leaked like that, it puts our officers at great risk. It's already a dangerous job, but when they get a heads up we're coming, it's only a matter of time before our officers are ambushed.
Unstoppable. Tom Homan has been a force at the border, but he's fighting lefty mayors. And now, even incompetence in his midst, said some illegals are let go before being shipped out. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
Fire Elon Musk. Elon Musk took control of our country's financial nuclear codes.
Elon Musk is destroying our federal government. He feels he bought himself a president.
Musk and his merry band of minions.
Nobody voted for his hackers.
Hackers, really? Keep fighting, Elon, and as they look to actually fix our budget with the elite efficiency experts, because they're in their 20s, Hillary Clinton, doesn't mean they're not great at their jobs. USAID also being targeted because of the ridiculous programs and the waste within that department, which has been targeted really since the 90s as a place that has to be reined in. Well, this administration's already done it. There's 10,000 people on board. It's going to be knocked down to 300, and they're going to be folded into the State Department. Griff, this is titanic changes, but it's necessary.
It is. You know, this is my favorite thing about Washington. Having been there for some 31 years, is the rank hypocrisy from one party to the other. And we've seen it on both sides over the years. But particularly right now, you have these Democrats that are lighting their hair on fire, defending unelected bureaucrats who are wasting billions of American taxpayer dollars on things like LGBTQ programs in Serbia and the like. And yet they are excoriating an unelected Elon Musk for exposing that waste. Since when did liberal Democrat voters support wasting American taxpayer dollars?
Well, the question is, do they want to defend these programs? So why don't you come out and defend them? $31 million for USAID employee counseling. $31 million? Who is costing you $31 million? $49 million to improve reading scores in Zambia's public schools. $49 million. So if you're so proud of this, go ahead and defend it. How about the $1.5 million for Serbian LGBTQ group, the Syrian Democratic Political Processes, $7 million gender diverse support in Bangladesh, $1 million. I'm telling you, there's a lot of programs in Chicago and New York City, Philadelphia, that would benefit from a Boys and Girls Club for that $1 million. There's a lot of other programs. I'm all for foreign aid. But if you are a group that doesn't answer to anybody, that's a problem.
But they've got a boogeyman. That's all they want. Look, let's not forget that they're accusing Elon Musk of doing away with USAID. They can't do that. It's the Agency for International Development. It was created by Congress in 1998 and put under the purview of the State Department for management. And so Congress themselves and these Democrats should be doing their own oversight. And now what Elon Musk has done, to their great chagrin, the Democrats' chagrin, is that they've exposed this unbelievable waste. And not only that, Brian, let's take it a step further. How about the State Department, since they have purview of USAID, does an auditing to find out exactly where all the money went, even for programs that Americans would support?
So right now you have people being cut from EPA. You have the State Department's going to lean out. For the longest time, Griff, you'll hear about, well, when a Secretary of State goes in there, they call him the temporary help because the State Department runs its own shop and there's nothing you can really do about it. Well, that was the first Trump. Trump went to school on what wasn't done, waited 4 years, watched it deteriorate, went back, and he's got a plan and they can't keep up with him. I just go back to the research that Mark Thiessen did. He said under Secretary of State Warren Christopher, they proposed a plan to eliminate three independent foreign agencies, including USAID, and merged them into a super State Department. He put it in a 15-page single-space memo. Gore wanted to implement it. He got huge pushback, so he dropped it. So Obama came out and said, some of these programs I can't defend. President Obama, as recently as 2009, there was an interest in improving transparency of this program. He said, quote, Barack Obama, the American people's money must be spent to advance their priorities, not to line the pockets of contractors or maintain projects that don't work. He was talking about USAID. Why are people not upset at that?
Why? Find me any voter of any political party that doesn't support making our federal government more efficient, to lean it, to cut down on the waste and abuse of the system. Who is on the side that says, no, I like the status quo and let's make it worse?
So right now you're seeing a group of Democratic lawmakers who are really an embarrassment to this country, led by Maxine, I've never done anything productive, Waters, trying to get into the Department of Education, and the Secret Service is standing in front of the door. So set the scene from what you could tell.
Well, what you're watching is chapter number 17 in a book of incompetence in a Democrat Party that is adrift in the wilderness trying to figure out how to fight. As you pointed out, Donald Trump sat back, came up with a plan for what he's going to do, and he is flooding the zone. Look, man, as a reporter in Washington, D.C., I feel like I'm drinking out of a fire hose. It's coming fast and furious. Greenland, Panama Canal, Gaza, that's just on the foreign policy map. Then you look domestically, what's happening with the border, and we can talk about that. But whether it's USAID, now education, and these Democrats that are trying to find some way to counter them are making a mistake, Brian.
Yeah, I think they're
Once again, just finding anything, grasping at straws to just say Donald Trump bad, rather than looking at the actual issue and, in many cases, the reform that the new administration is trying to bring.
Right. It must be frustrating to have absolutely no power and very little respect. Their party has got 31% approval rating, and Maxine Waters is sitting there screaming at the top of her lungs. People love this. And I'll tell you, Republicans should love this stuff to play out. The more it plays out, the better they look. Because they are not being conservatives, they're showing common sense. I think that's the goal. Here's what Jim Jordan said yesterday about what DOGE is doing. Cut 18.
When you spend money on stupid things, you attack the guy who exposes it. That's exactly what Democrats are doing. The proponents of big government, the recipients of big government spending, they just as soon keep all that secret. But Elon Musk comes along and says, this is ridiculous. As Mark put it out, some trans opera in Ireland, they're funding Sesame Street shows in Iraq. I mean, think about it. China's building bridges and roads in certain countries, and we're putting Big Bird and Bert and Ernie on TV in Baghdad. Who do you think is going to have more influence? So what Elon Musk is saying, this is stupid. Let's stop it. Let's focus on serving the American people, not having these agencies do what they want.
Yeah. Do you think the American people can make their own choices when they see some of these programs?
It's fascinating to see a couple of lone Democrat voices that have said, at least in the case of the USAID, that they don't want to die on that hill. And maybe they have
David
the foresight.
David Axelrod is one.
Maybe they see the foresight that, look, hey, let's let Trump go in. Let him be a wrecking ball for the waste and abuse in the system. And let's rebuild on the backside. Donald Trump is without a doubt the most transactional deal-making guy on the planet. And so if the Democrats lean into supporting him trying to get our government lean and down to a place where it actually serves the American people, as Jim Jordan was saying, and then Democrats make a case for priorities they believe that should be stood up in the wake of burning it down, I bet the president would support that, at least be willing to engage in good faith on looking at those priorities they want. Instead, it's just ad hominem attack after ad hominem attack, and that's not going to get him anywhere. Once this is coming, this train has left the station. Question now is, can Democrats do something other than just yell and scream and try and figure out priorities that they could support in the wake of what's coming?
Everything's got to be tightened up. We're paying all our money on interest rates. So in 2006, the U.S. spent millions of dollars of USAID money to boost the popularity of Palestinian Authority before the Hamas election. Are you happy about that? The former Soviet states, the organizers of the Color Revolution, political uprisings, have openly received hundreds of millions of USAID money. Are you happy with that? Is that what you want to do? And then Hungary came out and said they were using money to foment the opposition to the sitting government in Hungary. That's an ally. And they said this. They said they were using USAID money to interfere with domestic issues. The former administration couldn't digest that we weren't ready to give up our national positions. We weren't ready to give up representing our national interests. So that's what they're doing. They're saying rein it in. By the way, if that's going to be our policy, I want it coming from the Secretary of State and the administration. I don't want to be coming from an isolated organization that looks to berate people like Joni Ernst when she asks questions.
Right. And if you give someone the blank check to write whatever you want, they'll find ways to spend money. And you're talking about not just a couple of million for something that snuck under because of someone's special interest. You're talking about $40 billion in 2023. That's real money. And I think that when you look at some of these incidences with the case of fighting HIV and AIDS in Africa, well, that's where we started. But where we've ended up is a very bad place. And to think that you don't want to address it simply for the sake of preserving the status quo is unthinkable.
So right now we were carrying this for a while, Maxine Waters and two other Democratic heretics trying to get at the Department of Education to talk to the acting director who was just put there until Linda McMahon's okayed for it. Good luck with that, guys. Tell me if you make any progress. When we come back, another area of Griff's expertise is immigration. We're going to talk about what's happening at the border and put in perspective of where we are heading as more Venezuelan gangsters go to Gitmo. Don't move.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What's fascinating right now is we're getting a chance to see what happens when you take a business approach to the government. The same people that say we need radical change.
Right.
We need radical change. We've got corruption. We need radical change. Okay, well, here's your radical change. We don't need this. But right. You do.
Yeah.
The government does. They need oversight.
Yeah,
and they haven't had that. And because of that, you're seeing this not just waste. You could call it waste, but it's deeper. It's deeper than waste. It's corruption. And you're seeing that corruption get weeded out.
And what they got to do is, that's Joe Rogan, obviously, but what they got to do is continue to expose it. Musk shouldn't do anything in secret. Do your thing. Come out and say, this is what I found. I could say, this is where the money's being wasted. He said, I need to get into Medicare and Medicaid, not to stop payouts, but to stop mailing it to dead people and people that don't need it, Griff. That's the key. So that if you're going to lean out the government, you got to get into the systems and you got to get into the money.
I love Rogan's comment that, you know, everybody said we needed radical change. We're starting to get it. And they're like, wait, don't change it. It's so rich. But if you step back and you were talking about the Starlink, right? This is not only one of the most successful billionaires in Elon Musk, but this is a guy that's probably going to help us beat China in putting the first person on Mars. This is a guy that you go back that started a different way of paying. Right? You've got
PayPal.
PayPal was his first sort of rise. This is a guy in every industry he's touched, from PayPal to Tesla to cars to EVs to obviously in space. And in Western North Carolina, when I was down there at the height of the tragedy, I was with his SpaceX guys. It was putting Starlinks in these remote mountain communities, literally saving lives. Every time you put a visionary like this into something, you've had progress. And yet here's a guy simply saying, I need to get into here. I need to see this. I need to see that. That's because he's able to look past the pragmatic sort of like, well, we should normally traditionally do this. He's thinking big. He's thinking wide. He's thinking
right,
looking at everything. And I think pretty much what you should be seeing is some cooperation to give him that ability to do it.
A raid in Aurora, Colorado to get illegals and to target these Venezuelan gangs yielded very few, just a couple of dozen of them. Why? Here's Bill Malusian yesterday, Cut 22.
It seems like they were tipped off. They knew this was coming.
I do get the impression that there were some intel leaks here, and I think that probably they did know we were coming, but we're still coming. And just because something leaks now and then, it's not going to stop us.
What's your answer to that? What are you finding?
This is serious stuff. That made me really angry because you're talking about going after Tren de Aragua, the most violent Venezuelan gang members that murder, kill, rob, child trafficking, sex trafficking. And yet, you know, when Tom Homan and others have said that they want to track down the leakers and go after them, I hope they do. not because, you know, you're trying to help the community. I understand when NGOs, Catholic Charities, others put out guides saying, know your rights. If you're here illegally on a humanitarian reason, you know, you don't have to answer the door. Fine. I get that. Right. This is different. This is law enforcement going into a dangerous, possibly violent situation, and you're tipping them off.
Do you think media is doing it?
Well, it appears from Bill's reporting that there has been some leaks because of the law enforcement, ICE particularly, DEA says, hey, listen, we're going to take you on a ride along, keep it secret. But yet all of a sudden you've got protesters and you know, these groups standing outside the apartment before law enforcement shows up. How'd they find out? They found out from somebody, and law enforcement sure as hell didn't tell them.
Trump's ICE limits illegal immigrants releasing. So what happened is the ICE was capturing these people, but it turns out they let go of 460 illegal immigrants. They've been released. And then the senior ICE official says, we're fending off the hangover from the previous administration with bad habits. We're fixing those bad habits. 30 seconds. What's going on?
30 seconds. I would offer the advice my sweet mother has given me throughout my life. Don't let perfect get in the way of good. And what you're looking at with the 400 and something that were released out of 8,000, those are not hardened criminals. Those are people that had to be released because of available bed space. I think Homan and company are going to fix that.
All right. Oh, when are we going to see you again on Fox and Friends this weekend?
Fox and Friends weekend, baby. Let's do it.
All right. Griff Jenkins will watch you from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Griff, thanks so much. Michael Allen's next. Don't move. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show on a Friday.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip. And we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job. Do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
And with those statements and backing up those statements and standing by them, it's kind of rocked the Middle East, and people are mocking them and saying that's not practical. Well, you have a better idea? Please serve it up. We're open, because the current status or a two-state solution is not worth the sentence I just used. It's not going to come to fruition. Michael Allen joins us now, former special assistant to the president, senior director of the NSC, and staff director of the House Intel Committee. Michael, your thoughts about what the president proposed?
Well, I thought it was on brand vintage Trump to say something that was a shock to the system, that was disruptive, to put out there a big statement, increase his leverage, and make other people try and reply and give their own ideas. Even if, let's just assume some of this is unworkable, Trump has successfully put the onus back on the region, the other Arab states in the region, to come back with their own ideas. If Jordan and Egypt feel like they can't take on additional refugees, well, then what are they going to do to solve this problem other than always criticizing Israel for not being willing to go to a two-state solution and always criticizing the United States for not imposing that on them? So I think Trump's changing the conversation for the better and trying to get to solutions that will eventually occur once he keeps going after him.
So a couple of things. Since that time, now we're going to find out about a second phase solution, and I think it's pretty indicative of what Egypt thinks. Unlike Syria, when the revolution started there and all the unrest happened, all the different factions were fighting, people left. They were able to leave. That was their choice for the most part. You're not able to leave Gaza because the Egyptians made sure you weren't allowed to leave because they want no part of the Palestinians. That should be right. Brought up, because where's their big heart? Why are the Israelis and the Americans being judged?
Yeah, I think you're right. Egypt is the dog that's hardly barked since October 7th. We don't ever hear much of them other than they don't want to contribute to this Palestinian solution, by not taking on board any additional refugees. I understand they think it'd be destabilizing and they don't have enough money, they say, to take care of additional refugees, but they need to step up in some way or fashion. By the way, if we're all talking about foreign aid here in the United States, we pay an awful lot to Egypt to, as a result of the Camp David Accords going back to Jimmy Carter when they had a peace agreement with Israel. And maybe it's time for us to begin to condition some of that financial assistance to the Egyptians and get them in a different frame of mind. Trump's trying to actually help the Palestinian people. All we hear about, usually from the progressive left, is that the United States doesn't care enough about the Palestinian people. Here's Donald Trump laying out a vision for the future. Some of them are trying to focus only on the negative aspects of this, but they ought to just take stock of where we are, which is here's the United States president saying that they deserve a better life.
Michael, you know what's interesting is that people also know that Trump and Netanyahu are tight. I mean, the speaker just met with Netanyahu today. You know why they met today and not last night? Because his meeting with the White House went so long. They're talking in detail about something. And that strengthens the prime minister's hand at home and amongst its enemies. Here is Senator, among the people not criticizing Trump is a Democrat, Senator Fetterman. Listen to this, Cup 46.
But for me, I didn't really saw that as like a super serious kind of a situation. And it's really just trying to shake things up. And just announced, like, there is some truths about Gaza. How are somebody able to leave there right now when probably 85 to 90% or more of the buildings are destroyed or seriously damaged? So where are people going to live and how things are going to go? And how can you rebuild Gaza until Hamas is still allowed to endure?
So he's just saying, look, what the president's bringing up is that there are no easy solutions, so start opening up your mind. And also Qatar is playing a big role. Most people are saying, you know, they should kick out Hamas. I have news for you. I don't think even the Israelis want them kicked out. They need to negotiate with somebody, and that's going to be the theater to do it. So I also think in the back of their mind, in all practical purposes, if you want to eliminate Iran as and who is our number one problem in the region, they have never been this vulnerable.
Yeah, that's right. Iran is vulnerable for at least three different reasons. One, their crown jewel, Hezbollah, has been largely eliminated. So it was always assumed that if Israel took a shot at Iran's nuclear program, they would get invaded October 7th style from the north. But Hezbollah is gone. They've got their proxy Syria is gone. The radars across Syria and into Iran are gone. So Israel has a cleaner shot at the Iranian nuclear program than they've ever had. I think this must have been a closed-door conversation between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump the other day. I know President Trump has wisely embarked upon a maximum pressure campaign. The Biden administration let the sanctions lapse and didn't enforce them. So this is the path we should take in the immediate future. But I don't doubt that in the back of Netanyahu's mind, he's thinking, what kind of window do I have here that I could have a cleaner shot at Iran's nuclear program than ever before?
Right. And we'll see what happens if they are actually going to come to the table. As we look elsewhere to the challenges, we know the Secretary of State is went to Panama, and now the president's going to speak with the president of Panama about eliminating the fees and eliminating China's presence. Can you put in perspective why this matters for people that don't do foreign policy for a living?
Yeah, it's because China, not only because they want to take Taiwan and dominate the South China Sea, they want to project their power all over the globe. And why should that matter to us? It matters because it's about our peace and prosperity. The United States' jobs and economic prowess is directly dependent on our ability to trade all over the world. And if the Chinese replace the United States as the great nation that calls the tune, then over time, our economic prosperity will be degraded. And so when we look at where they're trying to extend their influence, wow, it's all over the Western Hemisphere. It's all over Latin America. And the first thing that we can do is try and roll back Chinese efforts to put their tentacles all over the place. And President Trump wisely went to the heart of the matter in Panama. why did the Chinese, why is the Chinese company anyway, managing port services apparently on either side of the canal? This is something we need to shine a light on. So I think this is the beginning of shining a light on China across the Western Hemisphere, and we ought to be glad Donald Trump's doing it, and we ought to be glad that Senator Rubio made this his first trip. He inevitably went down there and said, listen, everyone needs to back off relationships with China, because you know what? They're not good for you. They're mercantilistic. They're trying to take advantage of you. And I think that's going to help for U.S. influence and eventually jobs and prosperity here in America.
You know, what's crazy is that we have to figure out the cybersecurity for private and public and federal government, because they've embedded in almost all our infrastructure, according to reports over the last 4 years. And Joe Biden didn't seem to care. We do. As a country, we all should. So Marco Rubio was asked about USAID, AID, and we know that they have 10,000. We're going to fold it down to 300 as the proposal and start cutting out a lot of the fat and make them answerable to the State Department. Here's what the Secretary of State said in the Dominican Republic yesterday. Cut two.
We're not trying to be disruptive to people's personal lives. We're not being punitive here. But this is the only way we've been able to get cooperation from USAID. I had preferred not to do it this way. When we tried to do it from the top down, by getting cooperation from the central office of USAID, what we found instead are people trying to use the system to sneak through payments and push through payments despite the stop order. We found people that were uncooperative in terms of giving us information and access, all very consistent with some of the things we experienced while we were in Congress. And so we've had to do this other route instead. But we are going to get, we are going to do foreign aid. The United States will be providing foreign aid, but it is going to be foreign aid that makes sense and is aligned with our national interest.
Michael Allen, bring us inside the government. Why is USAID so obstinate and arrogant, and why did it come to this?
I think it's their history over time where they've decided that only they alone can decide what's good for the United States to do overseas. So I think it's embedded deep arrogance over a long period of time. And listen, there are things that we like about USAID. President Bush liked the initiatives as it pertained to AIDS in Africa and PEPFAR in Africa, or sorry, malaria in Africa. I think that was felt like he was part of that America's moral duty to do that. But things actually went even wilder during the Biden administration. We know that Biden was not a moderate president, and he put radicals all over the place. And you're seeing some examples of the things they spent money on, at least over the last 4 years. So they are deserving of being put back in their place. And by the way, for years, Republicans and Democrats have been trying to say that USAID only makes sense as part of the State Department. You want our diplomats deciding where we need to sort of grease the skids overseas, not some independent charity funded by the United States government. So there's some good stuff in there. There's a lot of bad stuff. We need to get our hands around it, and that's what Trump is doing.
Are
now.
You trying to – would you be for freezing – like he's doing, or would you be for analyzing with maybe an end game, because there's some of these programs that need to be funded? I don't know the reality of all these programs. Samantha Power says people will die and starve to death if we stop. So what do you, what's the reality?
So I'm okay with this temporary freeze, but I did notice, for example, even a Republican senator from Kansas tweet out there that we need to be careful about some of the crops that came from his state rotting in ports around the world because some payments have been frozen. So if there are things in train, someone needs to look at this sensibly and make sure that we don't have any crazy unintended consequences. But by and large, I totally agree with what we're doing here, which is that we need to review this. We need to audit their budget. We need to get a grip on what the subcontractors to USAID are up to. Senator Joni Ernst, one of our leading senators, is up there for years trying to figure out from USAID what they're spending money on. And as I understand it, they're blowing her off. They're blowing the Congress off. That is totally unacceptable. And this is why they're in the situation they're in today.
Yeah, there is. It's arrogant. So how do you feel about the way the Treasury is being examined by DOGE? You know, the Treasury Secretary said, have at it. They're in a look-only situation. They're finding all this fraud. It's outrage on the left. We've never seen anything quite like this. The response is almost laughable. considering their objective is not to make Republicans stronger, is to make our government accountable. So we're putting that in perspective.
When I see the reports from nonpartisan budget offices here in Washington, D.C., about the amount of Medicare and Medicaid fraud, I am gobsmacked. Someone needs to put a fancy software program, maybe with artificial intelligence, to run and examine what's going on. I know they have existing programs to try and figure out where fraud and waste and maybe abuse are going on, but I think I trust some of these folks from Silicon Valley to do a better job and determine where all of this money is going. Now, my congressional background makes me sensitive to the fact that it's the Congress that is the checkbook writer here in the United States. So at some point we need to be respectful of the separation of powers here, but this is what Trump and DOGE are trying to do: get a grip on where all this money is going and ensure it's being spent wisely, because our fiscal situation is in a horrible place, and this is where we need to start. Let's review where the money is going. Let's not be dumb about it, but where they're wasting money and where technology can help us figure out where there's fraud, by God, we ought to use it.
Thanks so much. Mike Allen, exciting time. We've never seen anything like this. Everything matters. And by the way, just so you know, nothing is final. There'll be a fight every step of the way. I just see a report out of the California public school system that just because Donald Trump says men should not play in women's sports or boys and girls sports, they're going to ignore that. So there's going to be lawsuits aplenty. Logic is gone. Common sense, it doesn't seem to be anywhere except right now with the Republican Party. Hopefully they'll hold on to it and it'll spread. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning.
Taking back America, the first 100 days.
You say, please, please, it's too much winning.
Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Super Bowl preparation didn't start for these teams after the AFC and NFC championship games. They started in the summertime, 6-7 months ago, when these teams came together. They had a belief that they would be here in this moment, and that's ultimately what they're preparing for, and that's what championship organizations are all about. You don't wait for big moments for them to become big moments. You live those moments every day like they are big moments, so you're prepared when the moment arises.
And that was Tom Brady with Fox and Friends this weekend. I had a chance to talk to him. We had about 15 minutes. Lawrence and Ainsley are on it, too. So we're going to post the whole thing as a podcast, his insight about his personal journey, what he went at with his 10 Super Bowls, 7 victories, and what it's like as a broadcaster as he makes the transition. That's all there. So go to BrianKilmeade.com. Also, quick note, coming up on February 15th, it'll be Saturday night, 8 o'clock, Florida Theater. It's going to be streamed on Fox Nation. Fox Nation will have all types of specials if you're there in person. I think they gave away a year free membership, which is just phenomenal. As you see, one of the things they're doing now is a Kevin Costner month, which is all his great movies that he's been in, Yellowstone and all his other great movies. So and series, obviously. The other thing would be I'll be in March 22nd of KTFK. All you listeners, I want you to see you in person at the factory. So BrianKilmeade.com there. That's also sponsored, maybe streamed on Fox Nation. So it's going to be exciting, too. So that'll be great. And we'll, of course, always try to sneak in your calls. But it's amazed me what's going on with Trump. I've never seen Trump happier than he is right now. You know, even those early days when I was covering him and he was promoting fights, you know, he's establishing himself, having a good time, going to Studio 54 and hanging out with celebrities. He always looks stress-free, running the Generals, Herschel Walker, Doug Flutie. Always was always into the interview. Those 4 years as president, got so much criticism and so many lawsuits, and then the 4 years in between. But now the guy's on a roll. He's got some speed, and he's got some momentum. And I don't think that anybody has any idea how to stop him. We just witnessed a half hour ago some Maxine Waters and her minions and some other up-and-coming incompetents on the left try to storm into the Department of Education. What do you expect to see? Illegal chalk? blackboards filled with pro-Republican phrases? What do you plan on seeing? Linda McMahon is the nominee, hasn't even had a hearing yet. The acting director is there. This is all showmanship. They have nothing to do, nothing productive to do. Republicans are meeting through the night trying to come up with different budget proposals where they cut as well as they renew tax incentives. Senators going over to Mar-a-Lago meet together to come up with their proposal. Democrats, you just sit there and they're on the Capitol steps going, somebody pay attention to me. Well, I just don't see the reward of paying attention to you. Till you get a message. Maybe Senator Fetterman. I'll listen to him.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's going to be an exciting final hour of the week here in the Brian Kilmeade Show. Ian O'Connor, one of the America's finest sports biographers, will be joining us. Longtime writer for the New York Post, four-time New York Times bestselling author. He's going to be with us, too. His latest book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. And you know that Aaron Rodgers, which he's going to be playing in the Super Bowl, early indications are he could be coming back again with the Jets. I'll talk to Shannon Bream about that. She loves Jets talk. And we're going to talk about the Super Bowl and so much more. In fact, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The Super Bowl preparation didn't start for these teams after the AFC and NFC championship games. They started in the summertime. They had a belief that they would be here in this moment, and that's ultimately what they're preparing for. You don't wait for big moments for them to become big moments. You live those moments every day like they are big moments, so you're prepared when the moment arises.
Nice. Tom Brady, Super Bowl Sunday, this weekend. Who are you rooting for? I'm rooting for Brett Baer and Donald Trump to have a great interview at 3 o'clock.
Number two.
This isn't a game. When the operations get leaked like that, it puts our officers at great risk. It's already a dangerous job. But when they get a heads up we're coming, it's only a matter of time before our officers are ambushed.
And that is so true. And that is Tom Homan out of retirement to stop and seal the border. And he's doing just that. He's been a force, but he's fighting lefty mayors. And now, even incompetence in his midst, as some let go of illegals that got scooped up at great risks. We got to get rid of some of the bad apples in our immigration system.
Number one.
Fire Elon Musk. Elon Musk took control of our country's financial nuclear codes.
Elon Musk is destroying our federal government. He feels he bought himself a president.
Musk and his merry band of minions.
Nobody voted for his hackers.
There you go. Fire Elon Musk. Can you believe it? This is keep fighting. Elon Musk's ban on elite efficiency as band of elite efficiency experts are cutting fat from our budget and raising ire amongst the Dems. USAID is being targeted for a great reason, and we'll explain it. Trump's goal to balance the budget is doing it through a great businessman, and he is creating a lot of enemies, and I don't think he cares. Shannon Bream has no enemies. Fox News Sunday is a place she calls home. It'll be on Sunday from New Orleans. Shannon, what's your take on the trashing of Elon Musk?
I thought we were going to talk about the Jets, which I actually do like to talk about, but we'll get to that.
Well, you know, if I could put that on hold so people have something to look forward to.
Okay, that's a tease. Listen, Elon Musk, he is a target that is easy for the left right now. I mean, there were times that, you know, they were in love with Silicon Valley and the tech guys and all that kind of stuff. He's not their friend now, so they are very upset about him. And there are a number of lawsuits involving him and Doge and all the things he's trying to do. He seems to be having a really good time, though, and I think that makes him even crazier that he's sort of like, well, we're just going to do what we do. Listen, there are a number of courts and judges that have stepped in to say, like, all right, some of this stuff got to be on hold until we figure out whether it's legal or not. But at the moment, there's a sort of let's take it to the streets war on Elon that, you know, as far as these young guys that are working for him at Doge, their names and information is being put out there. You've got people saying, you know, wanted dead or alive. It's getting crazy.
So let me ask you some. What is the legal issue now? The president through Elon Musk said, hey, federal workers, you got 2.3 million. Here's an email. I'm making an offer. Step aside 6 months severance pay because we got to lessen the size of the federal workforce. About 90, between 40 and 60,000, some say more than that, mm-hmm. have taken them up on this offer. And then a federal judge extended Trump's federal worker buyout deadline. Is that to further examine the legality of it?
Mm-hmm. It is. But dude, you saw that the White House's reaction was great. This is a wonderful deal for everybody. So we are fine that the judge is extending it for a couple of more days. We want as many people to take the offer as possible. But my understanding is that gets us maybe through Monday. But then there won't be actual arguments on the merits of this whole thing and whether the program survives. The White House says, listen, the offer is good. We intend to make good and pay this out for anybody who takes it. Well, you got folks on the Hill like, you know, Senators Warner and Kane, you know, who are in the state where I live in Virginia, who they've got a ton of federal workers and they're saying, don't take it.
Maybe, but they could decide to take it. They still get paid. It doesn't have to be financed because it's money that was be coming to them anyway, mm-hmm. correct? So
yeah,
we'll say,
I mean,
didn't Bill Clinton fire 100,000 federal workers?
I don't remember the exact numbers, but yeah, this is not new in time. It's very hard to do. The firing part, you heard Vivek Ramaswamy talk about this a lot during his presidential campaign. But the Trump team thinks, well, this is a better way to do it. And, you know, if you look at even, you know, the memos that have come out from the White House and what the president has said, he says, take yourself a nice vacation. We're trying to do this in a nice way. Take advantage.
And then when we see what's going on with USAID, knocked down from 10,000 to 300, will there be pushback there? Is that a union situation?
Yeah, there's definitely some of that happening. There are all kinds of lawsuits about that as well. Everything that the president's team is doing, you know, if it's an executive order, it's going automatically to court. That's what, you know, it's going to take some time. And they know that. They're not unaware of that. Well, what I find interesting are these warnings that are coming from folks like David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel and James Carville saying, like, you got to be careful of the optics of this. You guys are out there protesting outside of these buildings, or, you know, when people hear the examples of the stuff that USAID was being spent on, not the life-saving money of going to food and medications and that kind of thing, but some of the other crazy stuff that's out there, people who are going to work and having a hard time every day and paying rent and paying for groceries, they hear this stuff and they're like, absolutely, it polls well, and people say, cut it. That's not why I'm going to work every day.
So this is some of the things you're talking about. Improving reading scores in Zambia, $49 million. $49 million.
We have some work to do here on that front.
Yeah, 2.5 million EVs for Vietnam, 1.8 million for Honduran LGBT group. The Syrian democratic political process, 7.4 million. Really? You're not even going through the State Department? You would think foreign affairs would go through the State Department, but they don't even want to be approached. The USAID director told reporters that he would resign if his proposal went through, which managed to persuade Vice President Gore back in the 80s. Now, I'm referring to the Washington Post story that was put out by Mark Thiessen that said Warren Christopher recommended they fold it into the State Department, said it needed to be reined in. Vice President Gore wanted to do it in his reinvented government and was stopped by the bureaucracy. I don't think Trump cares.
No, I don't think he does either. And I think he knows that this stuff polls well. Remember our Fox News voter analysis of people coming out, telling us why they voted the way they did. I think it was 80%+. I want to say it was north of 85% of people said they wanted major upheaval or total change. They didn't like the way that things were operating. And so he is a change agent, if nothing else. You talk about him being sort of a disruptor in chief. In his first term, well, he had 4 years to sit around and think about what he was going to do. If he ever got back to the White House, he was much better equipped and informed. He had advisors who'd been through this with him the first time around, and he hit the ground running. He was ready.
He is. Here is what Mark Moyer told Jesse. He's a USAID director mm-hmm. who has now gone whistleblower. Cut nine.
Corruption at USAID took a number of forms. One of them was that people were subverting the president's will, refusing to, I should say, some of the career bureaucrats were refusing to implement the president's agenda. And they had the opinion that they knew better than the American people who elected the president. And so they figured they would do what they thought was right and not what the president thought was right. And a lot of them were beholden or had ties to the previous administration, the Obama administration. You know, the large majority of them had voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016.
So it gets worse. They say they hide their program. So when you go in for it, they'll name it something that is pro that Trump would want to do mm-hmm. and not mention what it really is supposed to do. But we'll see where this goes. There'll be pushback. But I just hope somebody sits down like you will on the Sunday shows and says, how do you justify these other programs? Why should America fund a DEI musical in Ireland? Why should they bring, why should they pay for $15 million for condoms to the Taliban while they hold us hostages? Why should we give a dime to the Taliban? So, Shannon, how are you going to handle Sunday, being that you're, you're going to be on the stadium, right, in the Superdome?
We are, and our exclusive guest is Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who is in the middle of all of these negotiations. Does the House plan move forward? Did it get undermined by their Republican colleagues over in the Senate who are going to be with the president at Mar-a-Lago tonight? He's got a really heavy lift. I mean, executive orders, as we talked about, that's one thing. You can come in, roll those babies out, be ready to go. They can also just be flipped by the next administration if it's not, you know, excited about what you just did. Getting things across the finish line on the Hill is going to be really tight with the margins that Republicans have. So we'll talk to the Speaker about how they get it done, if they can.
And there's going to be a mini fight between the Speaker and the Majority Leader, because the Senate's going to go to the Mar-a-Lago over the weekend, and the House met yesterday, and they're starting to get one big bill together, and Senator Thune and Senator Graham are going, no, we got this. We're going to make it two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting, because unlike Joe Biden, the president's in every session.
Uh-huh.
He's holding the baton. He's the conductor.
It's incredibly different. And think about that hours-long meeting at the White House yesterday, which was with the House GOP side of things. They said he was totally engaged. He told them what he expected them to get accomplished. So, yeah, he heard from the House yesterday. He'll be with the senators tonight at Mar-a-Lago and this weekend. But then he comes back here to the Super Bowl, where I imagine that he and the Speaker are going to spend some time together. And you know, sometimes with President Trump, it's the last person to have his ear who, you know, if they make the most persuasive argument. Going into next week, it's going to be really critical to see where the president lands. Is he with the House plan? Is he with the Senate plan?
So he wants to have no tax on seniors, Social Security, no taxes on overtime, no taxes on tips. So in turn, he says, let's eliminate all special tax breaks for billionaires, sports team owners, clothing, carried interest tax deduction loophole, tax cuts for made in America products. He wants that's part of it. So it's going to be interesting. He knows he's got to cut and he knows he's got to fulfill his campaign promises. And that's what made it so tough, because you want to cut at the same time. When you do no tax on tips and you adjust the salt tax, you blow a hole in the math.
Yeah, and the mathing is really difficult, because remember, before you even get to that stuff, you've got to get your budget number done. And I'm not sure there's an agreement on that top line number, because the budget will be the vehicle for, not to be too wonky, but the reconciliation where they hope to fold in all these other things on the border, on energy, on extending the 2017 tax cut. So getting the budget done is no easy thing, and that's got to happen before you get to the rest of this.
I understood. And lastly, who are you going to have sports-wise?
Well, you weren't available, so what we're going to do is we've got the NFL Sunday team with us, with Jimmy Johnson, Terry Bradshaw, Michael Strahan, and who am I forgetting? Howie Long.
Gronk. And Howie Long.
So, listen, they're going to join us, and we had a great time in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and I'm going to ask them what they think of you, your physical fitness, and your ability to play in a game like Super Bowl 59.
Right. That's interesting, because do you need B-roll of me, or do you need anything else? Like, do you need stills to help you with the segment of me in action
out? I've got your workout photos that you sent. I thought shirt on would be more appropriate for Fox News Sunday, but we're going to have to work with what you sent us.
Right. Yeah, I didn't send any. One of my staffers did.
So. Well, they've got the good stuff, you know.
All right. Shannon, we're going to watch on Sunday, if that's okay with you.
Okay. What are you doing this weekend?
We got Danica Patrick. We have Sage Steele from New Orleans. We got Anthony Robbins there to inspire you. We're going to have Carly Shimkus and break. I know you're arch enemies with Carly, but break down what's happening in the media, and Adam Carolla. Besides that, we have nothing on the show.
It's going to be fun and informative. I like that kind of show.
I didn't think you could be combined into one show, but I'm going to try to break the mold.
Well, that's what you do. It's your specialty, your niche.
Shannon Bream, you own Sundays. I'll take Saturdays. Back in a moment.
Brian Kilmeade, working up a sweat to bring you the latest news and opinion.
It's hard to look good and make sense when people are staring at your sweaty body.
Try not to stare. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think their primary currency was shaming and scolding and talking down to people and telling them, hey, I know better than you, or you're dopes, or you're a bro, or you're ignorant, or, you know, don't you, you know, how can you be this dumb? I can't imagine it. Like,
And then, by the way, they're fascists. How can you vote for that? And, you know, when you're in a state like Pennsylvania, like, I know and I love people that voted for Trump, and they're not fascists. You know, they don't support insurrection and those things. And you know, if you go to an extreme and you become a boutique kind of a proposition, then you're going to lose the argument. And then we have done that.
OK, that makes so much sense. It sounds a lot like Mayor Adams in New York City. He said, went out of his way, and people said that it's self-preservation. I don't know. But he was a Republican for a while. So he said, I don't think they're fascists. Stop calling them Nazis. You know, whatever you vote for, that's not the case with either side. There's no fascists or Nazis, all right? You have some people that are socialists, like Bernie Sanders, and other people that subscribe to that, like AOC. That's not an insult. Saying that she's a fascist, or I don't know, that's probably an insult, wouldn't you think? Maybe you should embrace that. I doubt it. So I just think that he's 100% right. You start with the name calling, you shut me out. Then you go to the Common Sense Party, not the Conservative Party. I'm not a conservative. I can't vote for Republican. I'm for Common Sense. What party is that for? I might vote for him. Rick Caruso, I've never met him, interviewed him, but never met him personally. It looks like anybody in the world would vote for that guy over Mayor Bass. Competence. Yeah, basically, it'd be a Democrat in name only, self-made capitalist. So that's who we're seeing now. So also, Joe Rogan, who's not a Republican, say he's going to go for, he's on the issues and the person and what the country needs. Joe Rogan came out and said this about what's happening so far over the last 2 weeks.
What's fascinating right now is we're getting a chance to see what happens when you take a business approach to the government. The same people that say we need radical change.
Right.
We need radical change. We've got corruption. We need radical change. Okay, well, here's your radical change. We don't need this. But right. You do.
Yeah.
The government does. They need oversight.
Yeah,
and they haven't had that. And because of that, you're seeing this not just waste. You could call it waste, but it's deeper. It's deeper than waste. It's corruption. And you're seeing that corruption get weeded out.
Yeah, and Jim Jordan brought that up, too. I'm see if I can get this in. But he was on with Sean last night. He is working hand in glove with Elon Musk because Elon needs an ally, especially in the House. He goes, navigate me politically. Let me tell you what I got to do financially. Cut 19.
I think the American people like the intensity and the speed and the focused energy we have seen from President Trump and his team. And they like, I think, what Elon Musk is showing them. And by the way, but for Elon Musk stepping forward and purchasing Twitter, I mean, I think he had a great line. He said, I didn't spend $44 billion to buy Twitter. I spent $44 billion to save the First Amendment. And that's when we first started our look at the censorship industrial complex, big government telling big tech to censor Americans. I don't know that we uncover all that, but for him taking that first step. And now he's going in, digging into government and showing us all the ridiculous things. They spend the hard-earned tax dollars of the families of the 4th District of Ohio, the people I get the privilege of representing. I know the people back home are pleased with the effort of President Trump and Elon Musk and what he's uncovering.
So that is Jim Jordan. It's 100% right. I saw some poll, and of course, Drudge, it's gone way left, had some poll. Elon Musk losing popularity. For what? What's he running for? He's not running for anything. What's he not popular with? Pro-cutting waste? I don't even know who would do a poll like that. Is Elon Musk popular? What do you mean? I mean, are people not buying Teslas because he's associated with Trump? I'm sure about that. But popularity, you don't sleep on the floor in the Eisenhower building and ask all your minions to leave their productive jobs to come to Washington to also sleep on cots because you want to be popular. I never predicted this type of backlash, but nothing should surprise me anymore. We talk a little football next with Ian O'Connor. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'd like to thank God, first and foremost, for allowing me to be here today. I'd like to acknowledge the other nominees, Jared, Joe, Saquon, Lamar, all had great seasons and all could be standing here today, and you guys would be deserving of it. So I'd like to thank Joel and LeVon, my parents, who, in my 20-plus years of playing football, going down to Pop Warner, I bet you they've missed maybe 15 games in their entire life. They are so dedicated to supporting me and my favorite teammates, who are my sister, my brother, and my little sister, Nicola, Jason, and McKenna. I love you guys. I know you take a lot of pride in this as well. And last but not least, my fiance, Haley, who you've been my rock. You are my best friend. I would not be standing on the stage if it weren't for you. So with that being said, be good, do good. God bless, and go Bills.
And that was Josh Allen getting the MVP award. A bit of a surprise. I thought Lamar had a fantastic season. I thought Allen was probably more important to his team. Maybe. But he only won it by a few. The other big surprise, no Eli Manning this year. Not even in the final 10 for the Hall of Fame. Was that a surprise? Let's bring in Ian O'Connor, 4-time New York Times bestseller. Maybe the premier sports biographer in the country. Fresh off his success of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Ian, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, good to talk to you again.
Hey, before we get into the game, Josh Allen MVP?
I'm okay with it. I probably would have voted for Lamar Jackson. I did not have a vote, Brian, but those two are you could split them by hairs. I mean, they are really close. So maybe Allen should have won it last year or another year, and finally he gets one. I have a feeling if Lamar Jackson hadn't already won multiple MVPs, he might have gotten a nod this year. Sometimes that influences voters. But Josh Allen is an amazing talent, so I have absolutely no problem with him winning MVP.
How about the fact that people are talking about the refs as the reason the Buffalo Bills aren't in the Super Bowl?
That was part of it. I mean, the Chiefs do get the benefit of the doubt with officiating, just like the Lakers and Celtics and the Yankees and Duke basketball back in the day. It does seem like these dynastic teams do get the benefit of the doubt with referees. But the Chiefs also don't drop that ball that Kincaid dropped when Allen made that incredible play on fourth down. It was a diving catch, not an easy catch, but Kelsey's not dropping that pass. The Chiefs always make those kinds of plays to win championships, and the Bills to date have not made those plays.
Yeah, I mean, when these games are so close, it's every little thing, a mistake, a drop ball, or one call, and that's it, because the games are so close and it brings extra scrutiny to it. But looking at this game in particular, the one thing that stands out to me is the quarterback. Jalen Hurts, I think, is just an above-average quarterback with a fantastic line, a great organization, and receivers and a running back. And I think that Mahomes is the fantastic quarterback. Do you see much of a difference between the two teams?
Well, I think that Mahomes is probably the best football player I've ever seen. But I have a feeling the Eagles will win this game. And I think on the ground, Hurts is a devastating runner, obviously close to the goal line. And if you look at Hurts and Barkley combined, including the playoffs, I think they have 36 rushing touchdowns. And that's not something that I think the Chiefs are going to be able to stop here, that running game. Barkley, to me, is so deserving of a ring. He's one of the great athletes I've covered in terms of the way he carried himself in New York. So he's very worthy of it. And I think after losing 2 years ago in a Super Bowl that maybe they should have won against the Chiefs, I think this is the Eagles' time to break through and win it again.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens. Before Barkley, they had fallen apart last year. The Giants beat them at the end, and they went right out of the playoffs. It looked like they were heading towards Nick Sirianni being fired. Here's what he said this week about the rematch. Gut 35.
A lot of players have used the Super Bowl loss as motivation. What's your messaging been this week to, you know, so players can use it, but also are staying within themselves and aren't chasing the past?
That makes for a good story. You know, that's a different team, different time. One thing we talk a lot about is embracing adversity and how adversity shapes you into the person that you are. So all our setbacks, including the 2022 end of the season there, we use to help shape us who we are. It's about embracing adversity and growing from all your, you know, not only the good things that happen, but then also the bad things that happen. Because, again, like I said, that just shapes the person, the player, the coach you are.
Right. So what are your thoughts? How this plays? You think the Eagles come back on top and Sirianni not only saves his job, becomes a Super Bowl champ?
I do. Certainly, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs three-peated here, Brian. And again, I think Mahomes is the best football player I've ever seen. So I think most people are leaning towards the Chiefs. I think it'll be a great game. I just feel after losing that Super Bowl 2 years ago in a game, they really could have won. You remember that officiating call, the holding call on Bradbury against the Eagles, which I thought was a bad call. I thought the refs should not have thrown the flag there. They maybe win that game without that call. I just feel like the way they're running the football, it's a great matchup. Barkley, particularly against the best defensive coordinator of his generation in Spags. But I would give a slight edge to the Eagles, despite the fact that Mahomes is incredible and will probably go down as a guy who'll surpass Tom Brady as the greatest we've ever seen.
Speaking of Brady, we talked to him this morning on Fox and Friends, and here's what he said will be the difference as he calls the game. Remember, he can't pick a team.
You have to be on high alert if you're the Eagles' offensive line and the quarterback. He's going to put a lot of pressure on those guys to be right in their communication all the time. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty of times where those blitzes are going to be really successful. They're going to get to Hurts, and he's got to make good decisions with the ball so that they don't create any unnecessary turnovers, because that's really the story of the game. Whose possession of the football, to me, is going to determine the outcome of this game.
And the possession will be with Barkley. I mean, he's the one who could control the game, unless you want to take him away and see if Hurts can beat you. Do you think you can take Barkley away?
It's going to be really difficult. I think what Barkley has 7 touchdown runs of at least 50 or 60 yards this year. He's a home run hitter. They're going to try to limit him to singles and doubles, but I think it's going to be very difficult to contain him, just given the season he's had. He's on fire. He's on a mission after his career in New York went south, really more because of the organization, not him, and maybe to some degree injuries. Also, I think Hurts, Brian, needs to use his legs and on those Spagnuolo blitzes to not necessarily force a pass when he has opportunities to run the ball, because he's a great runner too. So I think that's where the Eagles win this game, is with Barkley and Hurts hurting them, hurting the Chiefs with their legs. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's look at what Brady was. Is the other job he has is owning the Raiders. And Pete Carroll says, I want him involved with the quarterback. He was involved with the coaching decision. Pete Carroll, 75 years old, gets the, or 70-something years old, gets the job. But Belichick doesn't. And he would have had an out to leave North Carolina had he selected him. You wrote the book. Are you surprised that Brady didn't tap his former coach?
Well, I'm just surprised the whole league ignored him. That's why he went to North Carolina. And 2 years in a row, to really feel like there was not one job that Bill Belichick could get in the hiring cycle is amazing to me. He is the best coach ever. You're telling me when he called the Jets and Belichick initiated that conversation, they could have expedited their process and at least sat down with him and hear him out and also hear his thoughts on their roster, if nothing else? I just don't understand how in the world, whether it's Tom Brady and the Raiders or some other organization, didn't bring him in and give him a real shot to, hey, and if you're the Jets, or you walked out on us a long time ago, but we need somebody to come in and change the culture and reshape this organization, who better than Bill Belichick, who knows the AFC East like nobody else? But it didn't happen. I cannot explain it.
Well, put it this way. I don't think the Jets should do it. I mean, after they embarrassed them the way they did years ago, I know it was a different owner. Or was it? Was it Woody Johnson? No, it was Hess back then.
Woody
wasn't
was coming in. It was Hess on the way out, Woody coming in. And listen, it was so long ago, and Belichick is calling you, asking for the audience. And I just think it's just too long ago to care about that. And all that matters is winning. And the Jets haven't made the playoffs in 14 years. You at least take that interview, you sit down with him, you pick his brain about your roster, you pick his brain about the AFC East, at least do that. I just did not understand how they didn't take the meeting.
Which is a little crazy. About Tom Brady not going with Belichick, wouldn't that change the culture?
Yeah. And so, I don't know, I think once Bill was in North Carolina, it really would have looked bad if he did the same thing to North Carolina that he did to the Jets in 1999 going into 2000. So I didn't see him leaving that campus. I think he had to give North Carolina one season. It might only be one season, Brian, but to walk out, even if Brady wanted him, I just think that would have been a very bad look.
See, the other thing, what I find interesting is the fact that a team known for its stability, and that's New England Patriots, one coach all these years. And then all of a sudden they blow out a coach in 1 year and hire Mike Vrabel. Well, we talked to Robert Kraft earlier this week, and he said Vrabel's already changed the culture back to the way it was. What about that one and done? And what about Vrabel coming in?
Well, the one and done is really tough for a head coach to be judged that harshly, but they probably made a mistake hiring the wrong guy to begin with and should have gone with Vrabel and who was available. But I think your culture has changed when you have the quarterback in place, and it looks like Drake May is going to be a very good quarterback. When Tom Brady was the Patriots quarterback and it allowed Belichick to install a culture and maintain it for two decades, once Brady was gone, all of a sudden that culture didn't look so great. So it's all about the quarterback in this sport. The quarterback is 85% of the sport. If you don't have one, good luck. It's impossible to have a culture to win games. And I think the fact that Drake May, the young quarterback, looks really like a really good prospect, I think that allows Vrabel to do what he wants to do.
So what about, would you like the Jets choice, what they made, and Aaron Glenn?
I do. I would have preferred Vrabel. With the experience, Vrabel had beaten Belichick and John Harbaugh in the playoffs, had gone to three straight postseasons with Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. So I thought he was the best candidate, but he was off the board. I think Aaron Glenn is a guy you gamble on. He's the best defensive coordinator in the league, maybe outside of Spagnuolo. And he's a Jet. He was there when they were 1-15. And 2 years later, he was there when Bill Parcells went 12-4 and took the Jets to the AFC Championship game and had a lead in the second half at Denver. So he understands what a quick rebuild with the Jets looks like. So I like the fact that he is old school and will bring that mentality to a franchise that really needs it. And he will reestablish the physicality and just an accountability on the defensive side of the ball, because defensively last year, people talk about Aaron Rodgers and his performance. That defense was an absolute joke, and I think he will restore at least a sense of pride on that unit.
You think Glenn brings back Aaron Rodgers?
It's a very good question. I think looking at the alternatives right now, Brian, who's better? Like, who's going to go in there and win 9 or 10 games? Now, Aaron only won 5 last year, but that was with some of the worst coaching I've ever seen in New York sports, and also a terrible defense. I think he's capable of winning 10 games and making the playoffs. And I just don't see a better option on the board right now. So I think the chance of Rodgers being the Jets quarterback next year is slightly better than 50-50, which is a shock, because at the end of the season, I think most fans thought there was no way Aaron Rodgers would be brought back.
Do you think physically was the problem, that he still got much more football back, like Brett Favre at the end when he switched teams, went to Minnesota, he looked good again?
I happened to watch the tape of his home opener last night, Brian, against the Patriots. He looked incredible in that game. This was September. It was a warm, dry night. Kirk Herbstreit on the Amazon broadcast said, "I don't even want to talk. I just want to watch this. This is beautiful to watch." So when he was healthy before the injuries in the middle of the season, he actually was playing pretty good football. And at the end of the year, when he got healthy again, he was playing good football. It's all about health with him at age 41. The problem is, can he hold up for 17 games? I think it's unlikely. You need to have a good backup quarterback when you have Aaron Rodgers on your team at this point.
So there's two things. If you're the Giants right now, where do you go for a quarterback?
I think the draft, and I think either Cam Ward from Miami or Shedeur Sanders, Deion's son, will be there for them. And I think they'll make that pick. And it then comes down to, can Brian Daboll develop that quarterback, whether it's Ward or Sanders, like he helped develop Josh Allen in Buffalo, if we're giving him that credit, which I think he deserves some of it anyway. But at the end of the day, it's on the player. And a lot of people think this is a weak quarterback class, so the Giants can't miss on this one. Whether it's Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, they have to be right, or it'll set them back at least 5 years.
Or get Cousins. How do you feel about Cousins?
No, I think at this point, I would rather have Aaron Rodgers as my quarterback, not that he's going to be available to the Giants, than Kirk Cousins. He looked bad to me with Atlanta most of the time anyway. And again, coming off an Achilles injury, we saw with Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, it's so hard at that age to do that. So, no, I would stay away from him.
All right. Or Derek Carr.
Yeah, no? Derek Carr he's a bridge quarterback. To me, I'd rather take a chance on – I really like Cam Ward with Miami. I like him a little more than I like Shedeur Sanders. But I think either one, to me, you can develop into a very good NFL quarterback, and I'd rather go that route.
Lastly, there's going to be something different about the Super Bowl. President Trump will attend. Travis Kelce weighed in. Cut 38.
No matter who the president is, I know I'm excited because it's the biggest game of my life, you know, and having the president there, you know, it's the best country in the world, so it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's always cool to be able to play in front of a sitting president, someone that is at the top position in our country, and so obviously it's cool to hear that he's seen me play football and respects the game that I play.
So they're going to be happening. It's going to be interesting between Taylor Swift and President Trump, along with the games of high profile, the Chiefs going for history. This is going to be a heck of a game.
I have to admit, Brian, when I read that Trump was going to be the first sitting president to attend a Super Bowl, I was surprised. I knew George W. Bush was at the Super Bowl that Aaron Rodgers won, but he wasn't the sitting president at the time. So that did surprise me. But, yeah, it's going to be a great game. And whether the Chiefs or Eagles win, I'd be shocked if it's a blowout. I think it'll come down to the final possession. Just have a feeling this time it's the Eagles.
I mean, the Eagles win and Taylor Swift goes, makes an effort to meet Donald Trump. Maybe the whole world can come together, Ian, over football. Ian O'Connor, pick up his book, his latest one, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Thanks, Ian. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure, Brian. Thanks.
Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Just as we close out the week, get ready for the Super Bowl. After the Super Bowl is done on the 15th next Saturday night, please join me at the Florida Theater. And then just keep in mind, I'll be on it. If you can't get to Jacksonville, right over the bridge, you could always watch streaming on Fox Nation. It's going to be 8 to 11. It's going to be educational in a fun way. We're going to have a good time. And it's going to be patriotic. And we're going to bring you up to date what's happening in the news with a look at the Trump next 4 years in a way you haven't seen before. And it's going to be live. And I'm going to have a chance to open up the floor. We are sold out on VIPs, but we're opening up the second floor now to go over capacity. And now on the 22nd in March, we're getting there too. So it's the biggest venue we've ever had. It's 1,700. We're already at it, like 1,000. So maybe over. So I hope to sell it out. I'd be honored to do it. It's all the power of KTFK and the power of the great radio station right outside St. Louis there. So I look forward to seeing you all in person. So you, I appreciate all your loyalty. And my prediction, essentially, I think that Kansas City finds a way to win. The only way for the Eagles to win, they got to be up 14 in the fourth quarter. It's close. Kansas City just got a way to do it. If they're within three, they basically... If they're within 3 points, they basically have won already. I've seen it too often. But I think it's going to be a fun game. And, of course, the other drama, Kendrick Lamar, at halftime, I could do without that. But you're going to have the President of the United States there and Taylor Swift, the king of entertainment and the king of the world. Not bad. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here. Don't forget, One Nation, Saturday night, 9 o'clock on Fox News.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Follow and listen starting February 25th at foxtruecrime.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.